This is Ecoverse, a podcast dedicated to bring you stories about climate action happening around the world. Our podcast is designed to inspire, motivate, and challenge us. We'll hear stories about ordinary people who are doing extraordinary things to help our planet. Tune in to hear interviews with experts and people who are working to take a stand against climate change. The Ecoverse podcast is produced by Creative Studio Productions, whose mission is to amplify the good around the world. I was recently looking at the average price of a four-year degree in 2023, specifically within the United States. The numbers were not so good. The average cost of attendance for a student living on campus at a four-year institution is between the numbers of $102,000 and $176,000 over the course of 4 years. And for private colleges, the average was about $218,000 over the course of 4 years. Again, I'm not talking about master degrees or even doctoral degrees. We're talking about the first 4 years. I mean, that's getting close to the cost of a house. And on top of that, parents are expected to pay more than ever before. At some point, it just doesn't make sense anymore. Jobs don't pay a salary to cover those student loan payments. And add a house on top of that, and kids, we're just not setting up future generations for success. It really got me thinking about my own kids' future and what theirs will be like. Not only with college, but also with climate change. I remember that show, Earth 2100, and the projections of climate change once my children reach college age. I mean, they're going to have to be innovative and adaptive to the changing of the climate. But what can we do to set them up for success? We've never faced anything like this known in our recorded history. What do I do with the feelings when I read the articles about climate change? On the last episode, Ian Williams helped us understand some of the problems we face with climate change and food securities and the general warming of the planet. Now in this episode, part two of our conversation, he is talking about the energy sector, transportation sector, and what, if anything, we can do. Today I'm joined by my guest, Ian C. Williams. Ian is an educator, speaker, and business advisor. Through mindfulness, systems thinking, and regenerative design, he empowers the growth and development of individuals and communities.
Thank you so much, Ian, for being here. Appreciate you.
I appreciate the opportunity.
A lot of people feel that, you know, when they read the news or climate science or, you know, they're reading the reports that everything's coming out, there is a real fear that can develop, right? You know, what is my kid's future going to be like? You know, are they not going to have the same opportunities as me because our climate is going to be different? It's going to present many more challenges for our children. And so there's a fear, which I think a healthy dose of that is okay. Meaning it causes you to be aware. It causes you to go, do I really need this food product out of plastic, or can I spend a little bit more money and get it out of a glass jar, or those types of things. But I want to focus a little bit on, and like I said, we'll come back to that, but I want to focus a little bit on just to kind of hear your thoughts on the idea of the ever-expanding population, which has led some to argue that fracking, mining, and drilling are necessary if we are to successfully meet our energy needs. Kind of what are your thoughts on that, and is there a way to meet energy demands without damaging the planet?
Mm-hmm. We're talking about industries, right? I mean, that's really what we're talking about here. And so, you know, would it be nice to wave a magic wand and say, yeah, we're going to make the transportation industry not only, you know, carbon neutral, but carbon negative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that'd be wonderful. But... right?
Mm-hmm.
Energy production, mining and fracking, burning coal, burning oil, you know, would it be wonderful to do those things? Absolutely. Is it our reality right now? No. Mm-hmm. However, you know, for anyone who's looking for a little bit of hope in this conversation, there's a fantastic book out there called Speed and Scale by John Doerr. It's one of the best climate books I've ever read. And the reality is we have a lot of innovative solutions already at our fingertips. We're simply not deploying them at scale.
Mm.
So, you know, if you were to ask me, should we stop all mining, fracking, drilling, coal burning today, right now? The reality is if you put a gun to my head, I would probably say no.
Mm.
Because if we were to do that and just stop it all, think of what would ensue,
mm-hmm.
right? We live in a world that burns carbon for energy. It would only increase the equity gaps that we're currently experiencing.
Right.
Wouldn't make them any better.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would also increase the probability that we would start to see the dark side of human nature.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
But to be a little bit more constructive, hopefully a little bit more optimistic, the reality is we need to invest more resources, time, and energy into the innovative solutions, into building innovative solutions, to scaling innovative solutions.
Yeah.
Love him or hate him, Elon Musk completely transformed the transportation industry.
Yes, he did.
It's disruptive technology in a good way. Again, love him or hate him.
Yep.
Right? That's a different conversation. It's great to make the transportation, you know, the driving of the vehicle carbon neutral. But if we still look at all of the implicit costs and mm-hmm. computations, we're still charging those vehicles from a grid,
mm-hmm.
which is still largely burned, powered by burning of coal,
mm-hmm.
right? Fortunately, we're starting to see wind and solar pick it up. But those of us who have the awareness and the opportunity to advocate for decisions need to first educate ourselves on what it means to, you know, what is the common good? Because a lot of these decisions, again, they're intricately connected to social justice and equity.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to educate ourselves, specifically for those of us who are in positions of power and making these decisions. And then we need to really look systemically and holistically at the implication and impacts of those decisions. And we need to plan for the things that are going to, you know, have quote unquote negative impacts in certain areas, because we're going to need to mitigate those things.
Right.
We're going to need to address them.
Yeah.
So
that goes back to your social justice and climate change are kind of hand in hand, really.
Yeah. And it also really connects to my personal theory of change. I turn that dyad into a triad, which is personal and spiritual development at the individual level. This is not easy work to do,
mm-hmm.
right? For people like you and I to educate ourselves on white privilege,
mm-hmm.
or for business leaders to educate themselves on the impacts of their decisions,
mm-hmm.
or for us to educate ourselves on, you know, the carbon markets, which mm-hmm. is a messy space right now, but there's a lot of really good people doing really important and difficult work.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I really feel like there's a spiritual component to this work. Mm. And that might be a trigger word for some, and I'm okay with that. And I'm okay, you know, replace it with any word you want to. For me, it's a spiritual process. It's one thing to be awake. It's another thing to get out of bed.
Mm.
You know, it's one thing to talk the talk and another thing to walk the walk.
Yeah.
And we need to bring our humility with us on this journey, because the reality is the answers are all around us and underneath our feet every day.
Right.
Right. Mother Nature will show us and has for millennia shown us what true sustainability looks like.
Right. I want to kind of dive in. I'm okay with the spiritual component. And I think if we're honest, a lot of people are okay with the spiritual component, and those who maybe feel uncomfortable, maybe this is an opportunity to kind of stretch them into some awareness or some other perspectives out there. So I kind of want you to, can you dive into that a little bit, what you mean by spiritual component and how that transformational change takes place, not only in you, but through the actions that you do?
Yeah. I mean, the way that I think about this is inside to out, but it starts with the internal landscape, going inward to do the deep work, have the difficult conversations with ourselves, come to terms with the aspects of self and our lives that we're going to need to address if we're going to effectively address these grand challenges at scale. And that internal work you know, it's the quintessential like ripples in a pond analogy. Trickles outward to the social landscape, mm-hmm. trickles outward to the external landscape and the spiritual landscape. But they're not concentric rings that are mutually exclusive, mm-hmm. right? They're all interconnected. For me, that process of self-revival, and this, you know, a little bit backstory, context might help, is 12 years of substance use and abuse, about 8 years now, coming up on 8 years in recovery, and a lot of self-reflection and awareness development that had to happen in order to address some of the kind of taproot emotional components that were causing my addiction in the first place, manifesting in my addiction in the first place. That was a spiritual journey for me.
Yeah.
Even if I were to remove some of the kind of profound mystical experiences that I've had along the way, I would still define it as a spiritual experience. Mm. And that inner transformation is what has empowered me to be able to have these conversations with, again, hopefully a little bit of humility, but also the vulnerability that I think is required to really have them authentically.
Yeah.
To get to a place where it says, look, I'm flawed. And I'm willing to show up at the table and have this conversation. Mm. And I'm willing not to take it on the chin when I need to, but I'm also willing to, you know, strive for the common good.
Yeah.
And I'm willing to modify and adapt my definition of what the common good is.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. And for those of us that are privileged, it might mean living with a little less. Mm-hmm. It will mean living with a little less, yeah. right? At least in the interim. Until we can scale solutions that are truly going to work for all of us. Throughout that work, there's always that intangible element. Mm-hmm. It's always a little bit ineffable, right? You can't quite put your finger on it. Mm-hmm. And to me, you know, I would choose to define parts of that as spirit.
I like to say there's majesty, there's that consistent order of nature, there's kind of that whole piece, but then there's also mystery within ourselves. Which, you know, I asked you about the spiritual piece because I think it's so hard to define, you know, we have to be okay with some of the mystery of our own human spirit.
It's spiritual and for me, and it also takes a little bit of belief in a higher power when the going gets tough. Mm-hmm. That's one thing that's helped me get through, not in the sense of displacing any sort of responsibility mm-hmm. about the work that I have to do,
right?
But rather, you know, trusting that I'm supported by something greater than just myself.
Right. It gives you an anchor of hope. It gives you a place to kind of be hopeful, right? So, well, yep. Thanks for sharing that. I want to shift gears just a little bit because you also work in transformational change within organizations. And I'm curious just how you see climate change playing a big role in kind of the transformational change of these organizations now and in the future. Climate change and the loss of natural resources are obviously a huge problem, but what advice do you have for companies and individuals who want to take steps to better support ecological restoration?
I think the tool that will work for both of them to start in terms of just developing awareness is an audit, right? So if you're an individual or you're in a family, right, little family unit, and you really want to do something, start by auditing your behaviors and your impact and your climate footprint, right? There's all sorts of carbon calculators out there on the internet.
Yeah.
And they're not going to be perfect, but they're going to help you develop your awareness around it. And then organizations, you know, to do the same, right? And there are fortunately tools out there and certification programs out there right now that allow them to essentially compute your scope 1, 2, and 3 emissions impact. So it starts with just developing awareness, right? Yeah. Acknowledging you want to do something, accepting that there is something that can be done and that you're going to do it, and then develop awareness around it. Educate yourself so that you can have a more informed conversation about it. Also brings us into a conversation around, you know, where do we need innovation and what are going to be the most leveraged pieces of action? Mm. So for the family, for the individual, and for organizations as well, you know, we kind of have we have leverage points that are going to give us more bang for our buck if we apply innovation at scale in those areas. Transportation is one of them. Energy consumption and production is one of them. Mm-hmm. Agriculture is one of them. You know, so some people refer to these as the big three. They're certainly not the only three. You know, so if you're a family, you know, if you can afford to do it, you know, putting solar on your house is great. Mm-hmm. There are also community solar programs
yeah.
in certain areas. And we've done that before, you know, before we took the leap and decided to do solar, we got linked up with a community solar program where you sign up and there's,
yep.
you know, if you're driving through the Midwest, you see these giant fields of solar.
Yeah. They also have wind ones
yep.
as well.
And you're doing the same for wind. Exactly. You know, many, especially larger, energy organizations right now, you can call and say, look, I want to source my energy from sustainable sources.
Yep.
It's probably going to come with an upcharge. So again, if you can choose to do that,
yep.
If you're driving an internal combustion engine and you need a new vehicle, consider an electric one.
Yep.
Right. Or consider not buying another vehicle. And what would it look like to be a one car family or a no car family in public transit? Food choices are huge, right? And that's a messy, the agriculture space is messy. We've already talked about that, but you know, where you're sourcing your food from.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I am certainly no saint. And on a regular basis, I buy greens that were grown in Southern California.
Yeah.
They've traveled thousands of miles to get here.
Right.
There are plenty of farmers in the Midwest who are growing greens year round. Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a little extra legwork, but I should do the work to find those people and to try and source my greens regularly year round locally. Right.
Yeah.
Because the transportation of the food is going to be included in the carbon footprint of the food that you're consuming.
Yep.
Right. Of course, there's a conversation about what diet you're eating, whether, you know, consuming animals versus plant-based products, et cetera. So this is all just kind of individuals and families, but it starts with awareness and think about your highest points of leveraged action. Are you burning gas? Do you need a new furnace? Can you afford to put in an electric water pump?
Yeah. Or geothermal.
Or geothermal. I mean, there's right. And part of it is just knowing your options, knowing what's out there. Many of them are still going to come with a green premium right now.
Yep.
As you mentioned earlier, you're going to need to pay more to get them.
Yep.
And so I think this is also kind of pushing us into the conversation around, do we need to redefine what it looks like? You know, specifically here in the Midwest, where we all have our tiny little boxes and our tiny little hillside and our tiny little plot and our tiny little car, you know,
mm-hmm.
and cultures around the world for millennia have been living in community, right?
Yeah.
Intergenerationally,
yeah.
et cetera. So it's a huge conversation, but the reality is pick something that's doable.
Yes.
Pick something that you can implement today,
mm-hmm.
right? Even if it's, you know, going to Goodwill and buying some reusable bags and taking them with you on your next grocery shopping trip.
Yep.
Just start with something that's doable, because the reality is we need to start just as much as we need really comprehensive plans around how to address these challenges.
Yeah. That was really good, because I mean, the whole point of the Ecoverse podcast is there is so much to do that it can be crippling. And the whole point of the podcast is do what you can. Do what you can. And if that's the reusable grocery bags, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
If you can go plastic free without spending a fortune, so be it. I talked about that on the last podcast, where my wife and I spent tens of thousands of dollars for 8 months to go plastic free. And it was virtually impossible unless you had a lot of money to do it, right? And then, you know, same with the electric grids. I mean, we get our power from wind because we made that choice, because we called the company and we said we wanted to get the wind energy. And there is a little bit of a premium, but we have an electric car, you know, and I have a friend who says, well, to charge your battery, you're burning coal. And I get to say, well, no, I buy the wind power. Now the actual amps that go into that car, and I don't know if that was coal or wind, but I'm paying for the amount that I consume.
Mm-hmm.
With wind power. So there are those things you can do.
Yeah.
And if everybody started doing those little things, it could make a big impact for tomorrow.
Yeah, I do. I absolutely do feel that way. And from a science-based perspective, I feel like the real impact from all those little bit of micro changes from us as, you know, the little guys, so to speak, is not necessarily one. It's not going to be the impact that we need at scale from a truly energy production consumption standpoint, because that brings us into the conversation about organizations. But what it's going to do is it's going to build the belief, it's going to flex the muscle that we can do it,
right?
And we can have effective change, you know. And I'm often really weary of all of the, you know, blogs on the internet, like 10 things you can do to, you know, lower your carbon footprint. They're great. And we need to do those things, but we also need to recognize that we've been bought and sold a lot of propaganda.
Yes.
You know, and 1,000 households making a change to go plastic free would be amazing, mm-hmm. is amazing. And let's talk about the plastic manufacturers.
Yeah.
You know, and if you look into the history of industry, you'll see patterns, right, where the logging industry shuts down the hemp industry,
yeah.
right, because it's cutting into the profits. And you can see stuff like that all over the place. But it's not to black bag any of these organizations. It's to open up the dialogue around where's the leveraged impact and what are we really going to be able to do at scale. My approach to working with organizations, and you've used that term transformational change a couple times now, goes back to my theory of change, which is that inside to out.
Yeah.
Right. And so the way that I approach my work with organizations is, no matter where they're starting from, I kind of have three buckets to my work. And one is focused on process optimization or operational efficiency.
Mm.
The second is focused on employee well-being and engagement. And the third is focused on social and environmental impact. And so sometimes an organization will bring me in and they'll say, look, we really want to focus on our social and environmental impact. Cool. Let's talk about how we can do that. And the work that we do is designing custom employee well-being and or environmental impact programs mm. for organizations.
Yeah.
So really tailoring the program that's created to the desires of the company.
Yeah. No, that's really good. I think there's also the aspect of families and what they can do, like you had kind of covered earlier. And I think as I sat and I listened to you talk about your trip out west, I was a little taken back because I realized that there are some national treasures that won't be necessarily around when my kids grow up. For instance, Glacier National Park, you know, they're saying that by 2030, the glaciers are going to be gone. And in some ways, what can parents do if they want to go see some of these national treasures, but also kind of lessen the impact, right, of their footprint on climate change? Because there's going to be driving time or airplanes or, you know, there's going to be some sort of carbon footprint. But for those of us who want to share the beauty of this earth with our children before some of those national treasures are gone, what can we do to kind of lessen the impact that we have when we go to those places?
Mm-hmm. That road trip for us was, for my wife and I, it was actually really challenging for me because I'm aware of the footprint that travel has, you know, traveling some for work. I'm aware of the footprint that it has. The first thing that I would do for all of the adults listening is to encourage you to reflect back on your own childhood. When you were outside, was it just as special as the awe-inspiring moments of, you know, visiting a national park?
Mm.
Sure, you might not get the vistas or the specific, you know, geological aspects of that, you know, that park, like the Bryce National Canyon or the Grand Canyon or whatever. But we can still be fascinated by the soil in the front yard, or if we don't have a front yard, the city park.
Mm.
You know, we can find a tree on a city boulevard and we're going to look weird, but we can lay down underneath and just stare up at the canopy,
mm.
you know? So the first thing that I would encourage everyone to do is redefine your definition of nature.
Mm.
Because I think particularly for those of us, you know, in the global north, our definition of nature is wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
And to recognize that the national parks are not wilderness.
Mm.
They're very well maintained. Well, you could debate the word well. You know, if we want to take our children, our community, our family to see these places before they don't exist, I would also ask the question, how important is it for you to see?
Mm.
Right? Because that's a very, should we say, well, it's important and we're all going to do it. And if everyone does that, that's still a very self-centered approach to living life.
Yeah.
Right? Because going to visit Glacier National and continually contributing to the warming of the climate is directly connected
right.
to the glaciers disappearing.
Yeah.
So ask the challenging question. And it's not to say don't travel, live the rest of your life inside your home and, you know, make that home as energy efficient as possible and never leave and never live life. That's not what I'm trying to say either. But have a holistic conversation about it.
Yeah.
You know, And I've worked in youth education, and children are capable of understanding a heck of a lot more than we give them credit for. Mm. So if you're going to take that trip, talk about the impact of it while you're on it, right? It can be a special time and an educational opportunity.
Yes.
Find a way to, you know, so one thing that my wife and I are starting to implement is doing a carbon calculator. And we don't really have a historical perspective on it yet because we're just starting this. But what I'm going to start doing is essentially January 1 of every year, looking back on the energy consumption and then purchasing offsets for the year ahead. Right. And I think it's easy to do.
Yeah.
It's more easy to think about at the end of the year, right? Mm-hmm. How much energy did I use this year? Now I'm going to go purchase the offsets. Well, that's great. And we need to think, you know, again, this leads us into a conversation in the weeds about what those offsets are. But if you're planting a tree or the offsets that you purchase are reforestation, that's great. But recognize that those trees are not going to they're not going to draw down nearly as much carbon as you just expended in the year before because they're going to be young trees.
Yes.
Right. Yep. So there's all of these imputed costs and calculations that we need to take into consideration. But again, back to our earlier point, just starting is better than nothing.
Yep.
And then, you know, if you're really serious about this and you decide you want to go see it and you're also aware and you want to, you know, not just throw caution to the wind and say, well, I can't do anything different. Invest extra time in being planful about how you take the trip. Mm. Right. The reality is us choosing convenience is contributing to climate collapse at a much faster rate.
That is it.
So, you know, can you take a bus? Can you carpool with another family and join, you know, resources? Can you take a train? Mm-hmm. If you can afford to fly, and again, if you have the economic resources, airlines are starting to, you know, allow you to purchase a ticket that is essentially offset within the ticket. Mm. They're astronomically more expensive, but it's an option, right?
Yeah.
So there are options out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one thing that kind of brings me hope around what we've seen in the last couple of years, because I really do feel like people are starting to look more critically and constructively and creatively at the paradigm with which we exist in. There's so much to this conversation. And again, I think that that's what brings me always back to, we need to do that internal work.
Yeah.
We need to do that deep digging internally to come to terms with these things and to accept the raw, unfiltered truth about our actions and our behaviors and our beliefs. And then recognize that if we're really going to address these grand challenges, particularly the one, you know, about climate, and if we're going to do it effectively at scale, it's going to require some sacrifice.
Yeah.
In the next 10, 20, 30 years, it's going to feel like compromise.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to be giving up
luxuries
and conveniences. We're going to be giving up money to pay green premiums, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really negotiating for our children's future here.
Right.
That's what we're doing.
Yep.
And we got to be able to have that conversation authentically with ourselves and with other people. And I'm willing to do what I can and educate myself to the extent that I'm able, and to continue to remain receptive in hopes that it will provide a future that not only allows the human species to continue surviving, but allows it to really move into a space that is more collectively reconnected with the natural world.
Yes.
I think it's easy to think about it like, you know, we're going to go back to tribalism and we're going to give up our cars and we're going to, you know, pick up our bow and arrows and go hunt for our food. And there might not be anything wrong with that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we choose to define it as something that's negative, it will be.
Mm-hmm.
But for the people out there who, and I'm fortunate enough to know some of them, you know, they only eat the meat that they harvest off the land themselves.
Yeah.
Their relationship to that food is so much more intimately and deeply connected than you know, those of us who aren't harvesting our food off the land,
right?
Or you talk to a gardener or a farmer.
Yeah.
They're in relationship with their land every day, like you guys with your orchard.
Mm-hmm.
You're in relationship with that land. And that's a sacred space.
We can't just sit back and expect the government or corporations to fix all our problems. Whatever we do, we have to put in our best effort. There are so many issues that need solving, and it's up to us as individuals to make a difference. So go out, plant some trees, see some of the natural wonders and beauties before they're gone. Turn it into an educational moment for your kids as you travel to teach them about climate change. Maybe look for activist groups or church groups that are already trying to make a difference. The point is, do what you can. Care. Sometimes small differences today can make a big impact for tomorrow. The Ecoverse podcast is dedicated to help spreading the word about the amazing work being done to save our planet. We hope to bring you many more episodes that are filled with inspiring stories from around the world that have a real impact on climate change for our future generations. The Ecoverse was produced by Creative Studio Productions, a production company dedicated to telling the stories of people making a difference for our planet in the world. If you have a story that you think would be good to share, go to www.cspmn.com and click on the contact page. We'll see you next time.